This is Engineering by Design, a short podcast series produced by the Design Lab at NYU Makerspace. This podcast complements a series of fireside chats where we invite professionals working at the intersection of design, engineering, and technology. Our guest today is Renart Scherzer, a social entrepreneur, founder of Course Global. She shares with us her journey from studying biotechnology engineering as an undergraduate to working at the intersection of tech, innovation, and design thinking to drive social change and equality.
My name is Renart Scherzer. I'm the founder of Course Global. We're a social innovation consultancy. I also teach at Parsons, and I do a lot of public speaking. And I kind of define my work as working in the intersection of looking at nature and observing nature and learning from it. So biomimicry, design, and business. And I combine those three disciplines into the social innovation work that I do around human equality. And what led me to this was extremely non-linear path. I started studying biotechnology engineering as for my undergrad, and then went to work in the tech world in Israel. So I was working in a little startup that was doing online advertising, so very different from biotechnology engineering. There I was quickly promoted to be the head of the user experience of the flagship product of that company. And it exposed me to the world of human-centered design, of user experience. And it gave me this amazing tool to be able to speak both languages, speak the language of the engineer and kind of translate the user's needs into a language that the engineers would know how to code, and then go out to the field and talk to users and understand their needs and really, really observe where their challenges are and come up with solutions that match them. And then again, be able to bring that back to the engineering world. And at that point, maybe 4 years down the line with my work there, the company had a huge success. It went on an IPO and then was acquired by an American company. And at that point, that was kind of a moment for me to stop and observe. And although I was very happy for the opportunity that I had to see a small startup grow into such a big and successful company, it was a checking time for me to say, okay, how can I take this amazing knowledge that I've gained in the tech world and bring it towards social impact? And that's how I kind of started researching where I can learn this. I knew that I didn't have all the knowledge in the world. I came in from the tech world, but I wanted to combine design and art together with social impact and innovation and technologies. And that's how I found the program Design for Social Innovation in the School of Visual Arts. And I moved to New York and started studying that program. At that same time, I was one of the founders of a company in Israel called FISBO. And so I was doing these kind of two parallel crazy things at the same time, moving to a new country, studying my master's degree, and then founding a small startup in Israel. When I graduated, unfortunately, the startup didn't grow into something bigger and we left it at that. And then I opened my consulting agency called Of Course Global and started teaching. And so now in Of Course Global, we do many different creative projects around bringing human-centered design and social impact and sustainability into huge corporations like Capital One and Pfizer and Microsoft and so forth. And so a very, very kind of unwinding, non-linear path into what I do today. So for me, the most important part of design thinking is the research phase, the beginning, the discovery, where you go in and you immerse yourself in a new world with curiosity to explore and to get to know a world that you haven't known before. One example that I have is with the startup that I founded, which is called FISBO. And when the co-founders came to me, they said, we have this amazing idea. We want to take an outdated platform for buying and selling secondhand homes in Israel and uplift that platform into something that's super user experience that people will enjoy interacting with. And I said to them, you know, this sounds like a really interesting idea, and maybe this is what we're going to create, but I will join you under one term. And that is that instead of going out and solving the problem that we think that we need to solve at the moment, which is create a very user-friendly platform, is that we take 2 months now solemnly to discover the world of buying and selling homes between people. We want the product to reveal itself to us. We want to be able to observe and just watch and be super curious to what the product needs to tell us. And so we went on this path. What we did is that we took the tasks of the users. So instead of just assuming we know what it's all about, we decided that we're going to upload a new property onto the existing system. And what we found out was really fascinating. We found out that there is no mandatory information that we need to give. We can upload a property. Nobody looks if it's actually on the market. Nobody looks if we put any information in. Nobody looks if we put the right information in. There's absolutely nothing mandatory except one thing, which is the phone number. And so that was really interesting to be on the seller's side. And then we said, okay, let's flip it and take the task of the buyers. So we opened the platform and we made 100 phone calls. We called 100 different properties. And from those 100 properties, most of them, 90 of them, were not on the market anymore. And from those who were on the market, those 10 that was left, 5 of them were actually represented by real estate agents that just put a fake listing there to lure in potential buyers. So what we understood, that there is actually no validation. There's no one out there looking for the best interest of buyers and sellers. And it's actually a platform to get to generate leads for real estate agents. And so we said, okay, what we're going to create is the first for sale by owner platform in Israel that is validated, and it's only selling homes from homeowners to home buyers. And in the world of real estate, it's called FISBO. It's for sale by owner, and that's where the name came from. And so this is a really interesting example of how the initial assumption or the initial intention of what we wanted to achieve was completely shifted by a very in-depth discovery phase. The relationship between engineering and design, you know, we tend to think about it as two very different disciplines, but actually both of them are in the business of problem solving. Traditionally, we would think about engineering utilizing more of the left brain, the analytical, the straight thinking, the formula followers, and then the creativity is something that is more abstract, more colorful, more has the more that wild side. But actually, in order to solve an engineering problem, you have to be very creative. You have to look at the same problem from many different angles. And actually, to be a designer that brings things to the world, you need to bring it into a concrete state. So there's a lot of cross-pollination between the two. And I love thinking of the design process as kind of that beautiful merge of that cross-pollination. Because if we look at the design thinking process, it has that double diamond, that diverging and converging. And it exactly utilizes those two parts of the brain. It uses the left brain for wild ideas and creativity and discovery and coming up with as many possible ideas for a solution and going out and discovering a new world and exploring it and using all your detective skills to do that. And then it goes inwards in the defining stage where you actually have to take all the data that you've collected, synthesize it, analyze it, and come to that one point of view. And it also comes together at the end in the prototyping and testing, where you take all your wild ideas and then go forward with one and create a prototype of it and test it with your real users. So that movement between the right side of the brain and the left side of the brain is really beautifully illustrated or demonstrated in the design thinking process. I work in the field of biomimicry, and my unique kind of take on it is that I look at the human reproductive systems. I look at the male and female reproductive system as kind of a framework for how our society can operate. So I look at how our society currently operates very much from this sperm mindset. So there's millions running to the goal. It's a very competitive mindset, very binary. It's either you win or you lose. And we're kind of all in a race to that one thing. And then that, you know, that made me think that in order to create life, we need both the egg and the sperm. You know, just with that sperm mentality, no life can be created. So whether it's physically, metaphorically, or metaphysically, we need those two energies to come together in order to create life and to sustain life. And so then I started researching what are the qualities of the egg. I mean, that is the missing part of the equation. We need both the sperm and the egg. What are the qualities that the egg brings to the table that we're not utilizing enough in our in society today? And how can we bring those two opposing forces into creating life? And so the egg is actually a super unique cell. It has that 360 degree outlook on things. It allows millions of sperm to come to her. And she's really, really wise, really discerning. And the female cycle really demonstrates all of life's cycles. So we are a part of nature. We tend to forget this. And nature works in cycles. The egg illustrates that cycle pretty miraculously. And it reminds us of the need to rest and release and receive and regenerate and rejuvenate. And so my latest project is called What Would the Egg Do? And I kind of go out and tell people that every time that they find themselves, you know, frantically running to the next big thing, to stop and think, what would the egg do? How can you flip it and let it come to you? For me, the progression between being an engineer and adding on design on top of that didn't start with going and studying design. It started with me exploring anything that was of interest of me, even if it was the most peculiar thing out of my comfort zone. I just, you know, gave myself permission for about a year and a half to go out and explore as many different disciplines, as many different radical experiences as possible. It made me realize that I wanted to study design. One of the things that I did was I went to study improv theater, which is like the most extreme out of my comfort zone that you can get. And funnily enough, you know, it's really interesting to see how the dots connect at the end. But when we think of design thinking, a lot of the creativity tools are taken from improv theater. So not only that it got me out of my regular way of thinking, and then that translates into thinking in different ways, actually in your brain when you problem solve, it also probed me in towards my path for design thinking later on. So just go out and explore anything that interests you, that is out of your comfort zone, that scares you, and go be an explorer of the world and treat it as a design challenge.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you tune in again for our future episodes. We would like to thank our sponsor, NYU Tandon's Department of Technology Management and Innovation. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter @NYU Makerspace.